My name is Paul, I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and I want to thank everybody that made it possible for me to be here tonight. It's been a privilege and an honor to spend this weekend with you gentlemen. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the Texas hospitality that I've been greeted with here from the moment I arrived, you know, and a special thank you to Dick, who picked me up at the airport. I flew from New York down into Dallas, and we got in the car. And we drove, and we drove, and we drove, and we drove. I said to myself, I know they say, are you willing to go to any lengths, but this is ridiculous, you know. And then we got out here, and I'm like, I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I'm thinking to myself, what is this, like the AA Witness Protection Program, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know we're anonymous, but this is ridiculous, you know, and, you know. But, I'd like to tell you a little bit about how it was and what happened in our days today, and hopefully even the second or third hour I should be able to wrap it all up, you know, and see some of the newcomers getting nervous there. And to the newcomers, I always like to tell this joke, you know, to any newcomers here. There's a guy who's got like 90 days in the program, and he's talking to his sponsor, and the sponsor says, just think where you were 90 days ago. And the sponsee says, well, actually, I was sitting in a hot tub, half drunk, surrounded by beautiful women in bikinis. And the sponsor says, isn't it wonderful? You don't have to live that way anymore today, you know? And maybe you're thinking, like, is this it? You know, I mean, like, but I want to welcome you here. This is the last thing I tried and the first thing that ever worked. I tried many ways of stopping drinking before I came to AA. And I know there's some non-alcoholics here tonight, and there's no women here tonight, so maybe you'll get a kick out of this. There's a guy in recovery is out on a blind date with a woman, and she's a social drinker. And he's drinking a glass of water, she's having a glass of wine. And she says to him, I notice you don't drink. He says, no. She says, not even one drop. He says, not even one drop. She says, not even ever. He says, never. She goes, wow, what would happen to you if you took one drink of my wine? He says, just imagine you wake up, you don't know where you are, you're totally disorientated, your credit cards are gone, your watch is gone, your phone's gone, your car keys are gone, you don't know what day it is, you got one shoe on, you're totally mystified. She says, that would happen to you if you took one drink. He says, no, it would happen to you if I took one drink, you know. She's like, you know. But, you know, so as I said there, as it was said earlier on there, you know, you probably, you know, it may come as a shock to some people here tonight, but I'm not from the neighborhood originally, you know, and it's about 25 years now since I left my native Cuba, you know, and, you know, we'll talk about Ireland, and I used to get a lot of mental gymnastics when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, why did I become an alcoholic? Where did I become an alcoholic? When did I become an alcoholic? You know the old alcoholic conundrum, what came first, the chicken or the keg, you know? And a lot of guys that got drunk trying to figure that one out. But I just accept the fact that I'm an alcoholic, you know? And acceptance is the answer. And not at a cognitive level, but at a visceral level, I can't take booze in any shape or form. But, you know, if I was looking at my family tree, it's a bit like Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night. You know, there's alcoholism on one side of the family and mental illness on the other side of the family. And I'm not here to point any fingers, but when I took my first breath, I blew a .28, you know? And, you know, I could have been taken from the delivery room right to the AA room, you know? I mean, like, you know, you see that newcomer in the bassinet? Give him a white chip, you know, and make sure he doesn't swallow it, you know, and, you know. And I actually love Alcoholics Anonymous. I said there, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous give me the ability to live two lives in one lifetime. For anybody that's new here tonight, I thought my life was over when I hit AA and was just beginning. Once again, I had the cart before the horse, you know, and and you talk about we're sitting here today. And the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, there's an old saying, AA is one of the few places in the world that you can walk into a room full of strangers and start reminiscing. You know what I mean? Like we all, you know, I sit in the workshops today, and I was mentioned last night by our wonderful speaker, you know, our differences is like shooting fish in a bar. We can come up with those 1, 2, 3. I identify with you guys, it's the sameness. It's the sameness that brought us together. And we're like survivors from the sinking ship, you know. When you talk, we're sitting in this lifeboat together, this wonderful lifeboat called Alcoholics Anonymous. As I said there, it's and even like sitting with people today, people that I've never met before, and feeling that closeness, sitting with lunch with guys and talking and sharing. You know, even in the car ride down here with Dick, sharing back and forth. And that's this wonderful thing that we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous, where we share with one another to remove feelings of differentness and to realize, you know, I mean, it's sort of individual program powered by group strength. You know, and they were not like little robots, you know, walking lockstep in spirituality. We all have our own differences and whatnot, but that group strength. If I think I'm doing AA alone, I'm not doing AA. There's a friend of mine who says it's BB. I says, what's BB? He says, I don't know, but it's not AA, you know. And I need the strength that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I mean, because when you say you're an alcoholic, I know enough. I know you've experienced terror, frustration, bewilderment, despair. I know you put a drink to your lips and you drank it with the tears rolling down your face. I know that friends and family and loved ones pleaded with you not to drink. I know like you probably like sort of said a bar, or liquor store, wondering whether they're going to open because every nerve in your body's screaming for a drink. At the end of my drinking, for goodness sake, I drank against my own will. I know that because I'm an alcoholic. And you know that because you're an alcoholic. And everything I need to know, I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Paul, I'm an alcoholic. That tells me who I am, what I am, where I am, and what I need to be doing. And if I do that, I'm all right. And when I'm all right, everything around me is all right too, even if it's not. And Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to come to terms with my past so I could live in the present for the future, which is the rest of today. And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous what time it is in my world. In the spiritual world, it's always the same time. It's now. It's now. And if I can, these steps in this program, because my disease doesn't want me in the now. It wants me in tomorrow full of fear. I'm a fearful person, and a fearful person will always find something to be afraid of. It wants me in yesterday full of guilt and shame and remorse. But this program and the steps and the curing and sharing, I'm able to drag this crazy, neurotic, alcoholic head of mine and drag it into the present and get free. And get free from the one guy I could never get free from, which is me. And live in the one place that I never lived, which is right here and right now. I grew up in Northern Ireland, outside of Belfast. I grew up during the Troubles. We talked about freedom. We sang about freedom. We fought in the streets for freedom. I wouldn't have known freedom if it jumped up beside me. I'm free today. I'm as free as any time I've been in my life. It mightn't seem to much to most people outside of AA, but to be able to get on a plane in New York and fly down to Dallas, Fort Worth, and get in a car, that's a freedom I did not have when I was an active alcoholic. Because before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, alcohol was a common denominator in my life. Every decision I made was divided through drink at least once. I don't care if it's going here to the end of the road. Is there enough booze to get me there? Enough to get me when I get there? Enough to get me back? And when you live your life under those parameters, as we do, your life gets smaller and smaller and smaller with less people in it. I was sitting where I was at the end of my drinking in August of 1992, sitting in an apartment, drinking round the clock, against my own will, knowing loneliness only an alcoholic can know. The thoughts of life with drink terrified me. The thoughts of life without drink terrified me. Our boot caused a jumping off place. And I lived by the Atlantic Ocean. And I thought of my mother and father 3,000 miles away. And I thought to myself, I'll never see them again. And that's where booze took me. If another man did to me what alcohol did to me, I'd have killed him with my bare hands. And I'm not a violent man by any stretch of the imagination. But booze beat me and beat me and beat me. And eventually beat me into a sense of reasonableness. Where I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the debating society was dissolved. The could-haves, the should-haves, maybe one day, whatever, gone. I realize today, and I accept it today, that I'm an alcoholic. I got a body that won't let me drink, and a mind won't let me stop. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable, drunk or sober, if I'm running it. And I like to run it a lot. And that's why I continue to come to meetings of AA. I accept today that one drink, creates a thirst I can't quench. And I accept that about myself today. I accept the fact that one drink, destination unknown. Unknown. If I take one drink of alcohol tonight, you know, but because of you people, I haven't had to do that today. And Alcoholics Anonymous, as I said, they're this great fellowship, this great program. I'm not here to sell this thing, it sells itself. But I'm here to tell you that you can't get where I am today from where I came from without AA. It's an impossible journey. And I come here because I know how the movie goes, but I wouldn't miss it. To see somebody coming in here in the worst night of their life and be given the grace to not drink. And it's not the grace of God to walk in here in the worst night of your life and be given the grace not to drink for one day. As you said in the old South Bronx group, it's a cinch by the inch, it's hard by the yard. We just do it one day at a time. And it's so much more than grace. Alcoholics Anonymous is far beyond that. It's mercy. And what is mercy? Mercy is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me in August of 1992. When everybody in my life was going that way, and rightly so, the only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And they carried this message. My message mightn't even keep me sober. They carried this message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that when step one, when complete defeat through alcohol meets step 12, hope in human form, recovery can and will begin. People get people sober. God works through people. And I came in here and I was able to acknowledge that I was helpless. And when I acknowledged that I was helpless, I ceased being hopeless. Because if I still think I can, it's only a matter of time before I try. And the key to success for me in AA was total surrender. Let go absolutely of all my old ideas. And one of my old ideas was somewhere, someday, somehow, I could have half a dozen drinks and get away with it. Well, that idea was smashed. And it was smashed by alcohol. And thank God. And like our book says, do we have a replacement for the drinking? Bill Wilson said that one time. He says that Alcoholics Anonymous cannot be a straight swap for booze. It can't be a straight. He says sobriety has to be so much better than what alcohol offers that the alcoholic will not want to return for what's on offer. And this is so much better. What has been given to me in sobriety is so much more than what drink ever gave me. And drink took it all. In the Merchant of Venice, Shylock just wanted 1 pound of flesh, not this disease. You've heard it here shared this weekend. This disease will take your job, it'll take your car, it'll take your wife, it'll take the shirt off your back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. There's a lot of terminal diseases out there, but this is one of the most terminal. And if I hadn't stopped drinking, drinking would have stopped me. And that's not some theory I've come up around. I'm not around in a lifetime, but I'm around here long enough to know what happens if you take your eye off the ball. This disease, it never goes away. And it'll kill you stone dead. And this disease will kill me stone dead with or without drinking my body. I don't need booze in my body to burn my life to the ground. I've almost done it in AA with untreated alcoholism. Because I wouldn't accept these principles. I wouldn't put these program into my life. And I sat around AA for 2.5 years on the first half of the first step. And I was crazier off drink than I was on it. I've been the jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink, once without drink. Different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. And you can fool them at the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. I've done it. How's it going, Paul? It's going great. But at 3:30 in the morning, could-haves, should-haves, would-haves, guilt, shame, remorse, another sleepless night. Thank God I don't live that way anymore today. Thank God these people showed me a different way through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to sell this program, but I found the hard way. And that's just the way it is with me. I got to find and bring out the hard way. I got to wait till the dogs are right here, even in sobriety. And I realize today that we don't do the steps because they're nice. We do them because they're necessary for recovery. If I want to get physically and mentally and spiritually and emotionally rehabilitated, I must work this program. I've tried every other way of getting what's on offer here without working this program. None of it worked. Some symbolic victories, but very transitory. And there's a lot of like, oh, okay, this is it. No, that's not it either. Oh, no, this is it. This is definitely it now. No, that's not it either. Always looking for an outside fix for an inside job. Even in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I can just get the right job and the right woman and the right this, if I can get things lined up out here, then things will fall into place in here. And I found the hard way that that's putting the cart before the horse. A101, the change had to come from within. I had to make these changes myself, and then my life would fall into place out there. But this didn't all happen overnight. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and I used to get into a sit about why I'm an alcoholic. I just accept the fact today that I am. I grew up in a neighborhood where, I mean, I knew all about drinking. I grew up in a neighborhood. I grew up in a section of Belfast, and the sort of neighborhood I grew up in, if you didn't drink, you moved. Everybody drank. I didn't know anybody who didn't drink, you know. I seen public drunkenness. I seen drunkenness in my own family. And if you'd have told me when I was 14 or 15 years of age, if you could have come along, like in the Charles Dickens book, if the ghost of my alcoholic future would have come along and said to me when I was taking my first drink, look in that window. Look at that guy sitting there with everything gone and everybody gone, sitting drinking around the clock by himself. That's you in 15 years. I wouldn't have believed you. I'd have thought you were talking about somebody else. But alcohol did that to me. I'll give you an idea of the effect alcohol had on me. Just a little vignette. I grew up outside of Belfast, and there was a famous soccer player from the neighborhood called George Best. Everybody wanted to be the next George. Me too. I was a sort of a kid. I played soccer morning, noon, and night. I loved soccer. I lived, I breathed soccer. I just loved it. I was pretty good. A couple of the guys I played with went on to have journeyman careers around Europe. I took a drink. I don't think I kicked a soccer ball 5 times after that. That's the effect alcohol had on me. Everything, and I mean everything, went on the back burner when I took drink. I was like a boy bum. My parents didn't know what to do with me. The neighborhood I grew up in, either going to the maze prison in the IRA or you're on the wine gang. I'm on the wine gang as a young kid, 15 or 16. I'm the sort of a guy, I took a drink. Now, I used to try to figure, I suppose if you sit down and you talk to enough professionals, you could figure out why you took the first drink. Peer pressure, curiosity, rite of passage. But why the compulsive drinking? I sat down with 3 or 4 other guys, and I know those guys to this day. Some of them are heavy drinkers of the first water, but none of them burnt their life to the ground like I did. Now, why is that? I don't know why. I don't care. Why the compulsive drinking that separates me from the normal heavy drinker? I don't know, and I don't care today. All I know is that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and this worked when nothing else did. And those guys are still drinking to this day. But I took a drink, and I was, as I said, off to the races. And I'm the sort of an alcoholic within a short period of time. I'm getting my stomach pumped out on school nights. I'm the sort of a guy you might find lying in your front yard at 18, 19 years of age. I'm not here to point the finger at anybody. I did that for years, family and whatnot. I had good parents that tried their best, but I drank on and I drank on and I drank on. My early 20s, and I blame Northern Ireland. You see, I don't want to look in. I want to blame the outside. I was a working class Catholic from the wrong side of the tracks, growing up in Northern Ireland. I had a big chip on my shoulder. In fact, a guy said to me one time in AA, he says, you know something, Paul, you're a well-balanced guy. And I thought to myself, finally, somebody knows what's going on around here, you know. And he says, yeah, you got a chip on both shoulders, you know. I hated everything. I hated everybody. I could always find the needle in the haystack. And I blamed my life in Northern Ireland. Poor me, poor me. It wasn't that. It was the alcohol that was taking me down. You know, but it's no coincidence I'm standing in America with an Irish accent. I was a runner, a long-distance runner. Somewhere, someday, that over-the-rainbow type philosophy. I'll get things right, you know. And I come home to my father. And, you know, our alcoholics were such grandstanders, you know. I come home half drunk and I said to my folks, I'm going to America, and don't try and talk me out of it. My father says, talk you out of it, I'll help you pack when you're leaving. On you go, Columbus, you know. Let me give you some folly advice. Turn left at Greenland, you know. And like driftwood, I washed up in a place in New York called Rockaway Beach, you know. And you talk to people who know New York, they go, oh, Rockaway Beach, it's right on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean. It's a big Irish-American neighborhood. And they go, the Irish Riviera. It should have been called Cirrhosis by the Sea. They had more alcoholics per square foot. It's amazing, as we as alcoholics, I don't care where you put us, anywhere in the world, we got that built-in GPS system. You know, within 24 hours, I can find the worst bunch of drunks in the worst bar in the worst part of town. You know, blindfolded in a sack, I can find that type of place, you know. That's just the type of people we are. And And here I am, you know, I'm thinking when the plane going over, like, I'm trying to really make it big in the States, you know. They don't know what's going to hit them, you know. And my God, you know, I ended up in this place in Rockaway, and I got a job in a bar as a bartender. Now I'm using the word here, bar, in the loosest, loosest possible context. It was like it was a sort of a bar you got thrown into, you know, rather than out of. You know what I mean? Like, you know, those type of, like, you know, you wipe your feet on the way out, you know, and you know, and this bar had it all: alcoholics, drug addicts, degenerate gamblers, and that was just the staff. That wasn't even the customers, you know, and. I'll give you a mental picture and then I'll move on. Maybe you can identify with this. If you want to see a full set of teeth in this bar, you need a 32 customers. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. So. And that's male and female, you know. And but we find, you know, water finds its own level and so do alcoholics. You know, and that's why I'm so glad that I found A here, you know, just... And I meant to say this when I start out talking. So, I mean, the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and this weekend and sharing with one another, I had the good fortune to be in Akron, Ohio. And last week, and some of you know this AA history, last week on Mother's Day was the first day that Bill Wilson met Dr. Bob back in 1935, you know. And I happened to be there on that weekend. And the lady who was doing the archivist from Akron, she just explained the whole thing so beautifully. And she was telling us, we're in the gatehouse, you know, at the Cyberlin Estate, where Dr. Bob met Bill Wilson. And they were meant to meet on the Saturday, but Dr. Bob was so hungover. And he promised his wife he would go the next day because he destroyed Mother's Day. And he says, I'll give this guy 15 minutes. He's a fellow Vermonter, a fellow New Englander. I'll give him 15 minutes. And someone was mentioning Smitty earlier on, his son. He was so hungover that he couldn't even drive his own car. And his 15-year-old son drove the car. And they got to the gatehouse. The lady set up so well. She says, you know, and Dr. Bob and his wife, Anne, and their son, Smitty, came in. And I think Sue as well, their daughter. And there was some pleasantries were exchanged. Dr. Bob, very hungover. And the two men went off into a side room. And they didn't talk for 15 minutes. They didn't talk for 30 minutes or an hour. They spoke for 5 hours last Sunday in 1935. And Alcoholics Anonymous was born. And I feel so blessed to be born in a time and a place that has Alcoholics Anonymous. And the incredible thing about it, and Dr. Bob said this, and it's so been so exemplified this weekend, is that he says, everybody, you know, at the end of our drinking, everybody wants to talk about our drinking. And he thought to himself, here's another guy who wants to talk about my drinking. My wife wants to talk about my drinking, my colleagues, my people I work with. And he said, the incredible thing about Bill Wilson... And Bill Wilson had called him because he had 6 months sobriety and he was on shaky ground and a business deal that went sideways. And he knew that for 6 months, trying to help other people had helped him. He had half the puzzle. You know, and he just didn't put it across to the other person. He hadn't got anybody else sober, but he kept himself sober. And his wife had told him that. It was mentioned earlier on. And he said, Dr. Bob said, the incredible thing about Bill Wilson was, Bill Wilson didn't say, you know, I haven't drank in 6 months, and you should do this, and you should do this, and you should do this. He said, I haven't drank in 6 months, and this is what I did. I did this, and I did that. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not in the theoretical. It's pure pragmatism. They kept what worked, and they got rid of what didn't work. It's an incredible thing. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's almost like building an aeroplane and learning to fly at the same time. It's an incredible thing that this thing has kept going since May of 1935. And our birthday is June because Dr. Bob needed a convincer and would drink one more time and would come in June 10th of 1935. And A was born. And you think about it. I know we threw the right... I mean, it's a miracle that we're sitting here tonight in the middle of Texas, a bunch of sober men. And other men from Al-Anon. And we threw the word miracle around a lot in AA, you know. I got up this morning and I had a bagel. It was a miracle, you know. But the word miracle for me, a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be drunk right now, and I'm not. Now, how did that happen? It didn't happen because of me. It happened because of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time. And I wasn't in that room in 1935, but I'm sure it was a shot heard around a drunken world. Because what Bill Wilson was saying, Bill Wilson realized he was in shaky ground. And he said to Dr. Bob, maybe not in those words, but I need you, and you need me. And without you, there is no me. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's one hour. If you take this down, and sort of Dr. Bob mentioned this in his last talk in 1950 at the Cleveland Convention, he said, you simmer this all down. What have you got? You got one alcoholic working with another. Love and service. Somebody was there for you. You have to be there for somebody else. And this great thing, because for thousands of years, I have a relative in my family that was born in 1934, and he was an alcoholic, and he spent his entire life in an insane asylum. And he's died and buried there in a grave. That's what happened to us. Jails, institutions, or death. And once you've been to the first few times, the third one starts to look like a good option. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a fourth option on the table. Because of May, because of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith, in May of 1935, there's a fourth option on the table. And it's a pretty good one, where guys like ourselves can walk in the worst end of our lives and be given a life that we never knew existed. You know, they hear people saying, oh, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I got my life back. I don't want my life back. It sucked. I had it for 30 years. I could do nothing with it, you know what I mean? Like, I got a whole brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Are there people in my life that were there when I was drinking? Absolutely. But things are different today. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was lost, like out in that lake, lost on a sea of booze. And if there was any coordinates, it was pain and misery. And once in a while, we get up on the dry land. You know, as alcoholics, we're great starters. We get things going. But everything's built on sand. There's no permanence. And the first drink always comes along. Because I got nothing between me and the first drink. And I take that first drink, and I'm back out to sea with more debris than the last time. And I know there's new people here tonight. And I believe this, and I believe it so much that I bet my life on a daily basis. We have a symbol here in Alcoholics Anonymous. A triangle inside a circle. And there's three parts to it. Unity, service, and recovery. And I'm here to urge you what was urged to me. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, get something between you and the first drink. If I don't get something between me and the first drink, an alcoholic of my type, I will always drink again. I will always return to drinking. Because it'll either be go off a bridge or take a drink. And a guy like me usually will take a drink first. But I'm here to tell you from your very first meeting, and I believe that you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life from your first meeting. The unity that we have here tonight. We do together what I can't do alone. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, and none make it impossible. Service. I heard a guy say, one of our members say, the highest pay grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is serving. Why? Because we're full of self-centeredness. Full of it. Shackled to self. My Holy Trinity is me, me, me. And this program forces me to look outside of me and to see what I can do for another person. And recovery. Maybe the steps seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans. Easy does it. One day at a time. Live and let live. They were like the banisters to the steps for me. And I believe this. From your very first meeting, you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life. I'm here to tell you, not in the theoretical, but in the reality, from my own experience, that you can stay dry in two parts of the triangle. You might even stay dry in one part of the triangle. But if you want to be sober, if you want to be happy, if you want to be joyous, you want to be free, you want this program to work in all parts of your life, I got to put all three parts into my life. And the type of alcoholic I am, I got to do it every day. I was out in Las Vegas there one time, and I'm watching these guys playing Texas Hold'em. And the guy stood up and he says, I'm all in. And I thought to myself, what a great metaphor for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to be all in, and I got to be all in every day. And that's the type of alcoholic I am. I can't stray for the path very, very long. And I'm glad to know that today, you know, because this disease, it'll beat me up in a very short space of time if I don't come here and hang out here with my brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous. But as I say, as a young guy out in New York for the first time, 23, 24 years of age, I'm drinking. Now there's nobody saying to me, it's 7:30 in the morning, what are you doing with a drink in your hand? And like Bill Wilson says in his story, I went down the ski jump. And very quickly, I did in 5 years, that might have took 10 or 15 back in Ireland with all the security blankets and all the people putting the props in front of me. And I went down hard. I got a job in that bar, went down hard. There was a lot of hard drinking in that bar. I seen guys drinking first thing in the morning before they got on the train. And that's what I do. That's the type of alcoholic I am. I move the goal line. If I ever drink in the morning and I reach it, I was a morning drinker for years. My drinking got so bad. I'm in a job. I used to bartend from 6 at night to 4 in the morning. I'm in a job where I can walk behind the bar at 6 o'clock at night and pour myself a drink and drink all night behind the stick. At the end of my drinking, my nerves are so bad, I couldn't even get to work. I couldn't be around people, which is a difficult thing to do if you're a bartender. I couldn't be around people riding elevators. The subway would come in. I put my back against the wall. My nerves were shot. Fears, my fears had fears, all this nervous, the neurosis, just the what booze does to us. And I would drink again, and I would drink again, and I would drink again. Like as I said, a lunacy commission should have been appointed. Because the evidence was stacked to the ceiling that I shouldn't be drinking. And there I am drinking again. And that's because before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing between me and the first drink. The thought of a drink became the obsession of a drink, became the reality of drinking. And once the clock started ticking on that sequence of events, I had no way of stopping the clock. And I got in the ring many times, and I would think, me taking a drink tonight is like getting in the ring with a heavyweight champion. And I would do that. I'd get back in the ring and tell myself the epitaph that we talk about, the epitaph, the doggerel of the alcoholic. It'll be different this time. And my little girl could have told me, don't get in the ring. But don't get in the ring means don't take a drink. And I don't know how not to take a drink. So I get back in the ring and I tell myself, it'll be different this time. It was her, it was them, it was it. I'll bob, I'll weave, I'll stay off the ropes. But I always end up back on the canvas looking up at the lights saying, how did this happen again? And it was one more attempt at drinking followed by one more failure at not drinking followed by one more attempt at drinking ad infinitum. You know, and it was just in those last, I'm here to tell you, the worst years of my drinking, 27 to 30, were after I made a firm conviction not to drink anymore. The worst years were after I drew, that's it. I'll just tell you one story. I was on a bad drunk one time. And I had run the whole gamut at this stage. You know, as a weekend drinker, as a kid, a daily drinker, a morning drinker, binge drinker. The drinking done me in from 27 to 30. I was a periodic alcoholic. And you know the equation. The drunks get longer and the period between them getting shorter. And I was off drink for about 4 or 5 weeks one time. It was the longest I was ever off drink. And, I backed that up. I'm on a bad drunk. And I went into an alcoholic seizure in a bar. Now, I had seizures before. And I woke up in a hospital in Rockaway. And I'm in a restraining sheet. And they got me strapped to the bed. And they give me some Librium to get me down off the ceiling. And the point they're trying to make is, the woman who was very close to me at that time was standing by the bedside. And I wasn't trying to be cinematic, but I took her hand when they took the restraining cuffs off. And I took her hand and I says, I will never, ever drink again. I don't know why I can't drink, but it's obvious I can't drink. That's it. I'm done. Finished. It's over. There's a friend of mine says, Paul, if they'd have put you in a lie detector machine, you'd have passed with flying colors. And that's the truth. I meant that as much as anything I've ever met in my life. But I didn't have unity. I didn't have service. I didn't have recovery. I didn't know what the problem was. And I sure as hell didn't know what the solution was. And I left that hospital, and even with that firm conviction not to drink again, it was back to the same game. It was me against alcohol. And up to this moment in time, tonight, I have never beaten an obsession to drink. Never. And I left that hospital, and if you'd have told me I was going to drink again, I'd have said, you're out of your mind. But here's what happens to me. When I try to stop drinking without a fellowship and a program that allows me to find a higher power, here's what happens to me when I go toe-to-toe. About a week goes by. And I get this stone in my shoe. I don't know where it comes from, but it's there all the time. 2 weeks go by. I get like a knot in my stomach. I don't know where it came from, but it's there all the time. 3 weeks go by. The top button of my shirt feels tight all the time. A month goes by. It feels like everybody's on my case, even they're not. I hadn't had a drink in my body for 30 days. That's not a drinking problem. That's a living sober problem. And I found the hard way. I found the hard way. I almost paid up with my own life. The hard way. That there's a huge difference between an alcohol problem and alcoholism. A drinking problem is solved by not drinking. And they live their lives happily ever after. Our book talks about it. A medical reason and a romantic reason. And they stop or moderate. And they go on with their lives and live happily ever after. We have alcoholism. It's physical. And it's mental. And it's spiritual. And it's emotional. And wrapped up in a body full of sick emotions. Not drinking, Bill Wilson says, is a start. But it's just a brief start. It must be followed up by something else. I can't just stay an arm's length away from a drink. I got to be 12 steps away from a drink. That's the type of alcoholic I am. And I left that so within 30 days. And I couldn't believe it. I'm standing there with a drink in my hand. I remember walking the boardwalk in Rockaway. Before it got washed away in the storm. I'm walking the boardwalk. And I'm walking the boardwalk like a mantra. And I'm going, I can't drink, I can't drink. I know I can't drink, I can't drink, I can't drink, I can't. And I walked right off the boardwalk. And walked right into a bar. I walked up to the bar and ordered a pint of Guinness and a glass of Bushmills. And they told me, if I could have got a photograph of myself at that time, that I was insane. And the thing about insanity with alcoholism is, you can be making rational decisions in other parts of your life. Not that I really was, but you potentially could be. Making rational decisions in other parts of your life. When it comes to alcohol, I go dark. There's a blind spot. And I can't bring to memory with sufficient force the pain and misery of previous, and even that hospitalization on top of other hospitalizations. And I walk in and I order a drink. I'm an alcoholic. I take that first drink and I'm off on the well-known spree that the doctor talks about. And that woman says to me, and I'll tell you about those 30 days or 5 or 6 weeks that I was off drink before I busted out drinking. And it's funny, the insanity of alcoholism. I bartended the last 5 years drinking, and I bartended the first 12 years in AA. And I would have said this, and I said it from the podium, wrongly. I thought, alcoholism. You want to see alcoholism? You see that guy dancing on the pool table in his underwear? That's alcoholism. I found out later on in AA, that's not alcoholism. That's drunken behavior. And it's always going to be irrational. You want to see alcoholism? You want to see real alcoholism in my life? You put me out there with no drink and no program, and you watch me. You'll see real, untreated, unadulterated alcoholism. That's a funny type of insanity. It's not the sort of a type of insanity where you see, like in some Victorian halls of Bedlam, and you see somebody running around with straggly hair, screaming out loud, and you go, well, there's somebody that's really crazy. That's not the type of insanity they're talking about. For me, I'm not drinking with no program. It was like this long, slow, prolonged internal scream. And I'm just like, and I'm in New York City, one of the most populated cities in the world. And I want to say to somebody, I want to grab somebody and say, you know what? They tell me not to drink. I haven't drank in 5 weeks, but I'm going out of my mind. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't know how to articulate that. I don't know how to put the words and music to that before I came to A. So what I do, I try and push it down, and I push it down. But you can't push it down. It just keeps coming up and up and up. And I took that drink. And the thing about it was, that woman I was talking about, I had an argument with her before I went drinking. And I drew back and I punched a hole in the sheetrock wall. And she looked at me and she says, and she was right. She says, you're crazier off drink than you were on it. Now I'm going to tell you something. I never punched a hole in the wall in my life drinking. Here I am off drink with no AA. And That's untreated alcoholism in my life. And I drank again. I drank for after that there. You know, and hit bottoms to bottoms. But I'm here to offer you here tonight. As far down as you go with drink, you can come back up and then some in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to stand up here like some snake oil salesman in a traveling medicine show and promise you the moon and the stars. I'm not going to do that. There's things I lost through drinking, they're not coming back. But there's things that you lost through drinking, they're not coming back either. But because of this program, events like I just talked about, who among us could live with the guilt and the shame and remorse if it wasn't for the 12 steps to alleviate that? I can't change my past, but I can change my perception of my past. I accept the fact that I was an alcoholic, and 95% of what I used to do, I don't do today. And the other 5 or 10%, I'm trying to work on a day at a time with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the help of AA. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying underachievement is a virtue worth striving for, but perfection is a hope and a dream and illusion, and I'll get a guy like me drunk. I don't drink one day at a time, and the rest is up for grabs on a daily basis. There's days I drink, and there's days I don't drink, and there's days I'm sober. And I hung around here long to figure out the difference, and I know what to do. And the problem is when I'm trying to do this thing alone, and I need your help even today. And I drank on, and I just summed this up at the end of my drinking. When you think about some of the things that we go through, I remember my mother tracked me. I'd go off the grid for months at a time. I remember my mother tracked me down on something about Christmas Eve in the life of an alcoholic. She tracked me down on Christmas Eve, and I was living in a basement of a house on a mattress and a phone that took incoming calls, and she tracked me down. And she says, with a time difference, she says, "Paul, I went to midnight mass tonight and I prayed for you." And I'm thinking, don't pray for me. I'm beyond the beyond and I'm not coming back. And I'd like to tell you, I walked out into the Christmas Eve and had some Frank Capra moment, a wonderful life, but I didn't. I drank on. But I'm here as a direct result of a 12-step call in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to share this with you, how AA worked in my life. We all have our own miracle stories, and here's mine. And that's what I love when I hear an AA talk, and it goes down, and it goes down, and it goes down, and then you hear, and then. And my ears go up like a German shepherd, because I know God's coming in the next sentence. And that's what happened to me. That woman who was close to me at that time was at her work. I was on a bad drunk. Nobody had seen me for a while. And she says, and a woman who just started with her company, says, "Why is that woman crying?" She says, "Oh, she's got this on again, off again boyfriend. He's a bad drinker. Nobody's seen him for a while. They might have to break the door down." And she says, "My father's got a friend who's in this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. You want me to get the number?" Beyond the realm of human engineering. You know, when God's involved, they're not obstacles. They just don't exist. A phone call was made, a phone number was got, and I'm sitting in the apartment, as we do, drinking round the clock, against my own will. Here's a recipe for unhappiness. Lock yourself in a room, drink round the clock, and listen to blues music. You know what I mean? And the sadder the song, the better I felt, you know? I might feel like the Whipping Post, the Allman Brothers, you know, an all-time favorite. Another one was B.B. King. "Nobody loves me but my mother. And she may be jiving me too," you know. I was another. And my all-time favorite was Warren Zevon. "If you won't leave me, I'll find somebody that will," you know. And that's right, Warren. That's right, you know. And I'm sitting in this apartment, and like Bill Wilson sums up the end of an alcoholic's drinking better than anybody ever heard. He says quicksand stretched all around him. No matter which way I turned, there was nowhere to go. All my scorecards read zero. I lived in an apartment. I'd see people going to work. I'd see them coming home from work. I wanted to be where they were. But I knew that I couldn't. I knew that I'd ostracized myself. I knew that I'd banished myself. The good news is AA built a bridge. Bill Wilson says AA is a bridge back to life. And AA built a bridge back to life where I'm going to work now. I'm coming home from work, not sitting in an apartment looking with my face pressed up to reality, wondering how does everybody else do it. I'm doing life today on life's terms because of AA. But a note came under my door with a man's telephone number on it. And I picked up the phone and I called a complete stranger. And this man had been in AA since 1961 from the old South Bronx group. And they had a mantra, "We don't give up on anybody." And him and another man came to my house and they carried this message. And looking back on it now, what they did, they came to my house or my apartment and they just came to the, and led me off the battlefield. Said, "Paul, the war's over." And they brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was able to acquire peace with honor because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they came, and this was the first person. That's why that Dr. Bob Bill Wilson story. This was the first person I felt that really understood me at a visceral level. He talked about drinking himself in under straitjackets in places like Bellevue Hospital and Mount Carmel McGill. He knew Bill Wilson personally. And he shared his experience, how he drank, his strength, how he got sober, and his hope, how I might get sober. And that's why I believe Alcoholics Anonymous is, we'd rather see a miracle than hear one. We'd rather see a sermon than hear one. AA is hope in human form. And he shared his experience. He wasn't up in some ivory tower reminiscing how AA is not the way it used to be. He was still in the trenches helping another alcoholic. I was too sick. And before they came to the house, he says to me, we talked briefly on the phone, he says, do you believe in God? And I says, I thought to myself, man, I got Billy Graham coming over to the house, you know? I mean, Jesus, you know? I was going to ask him to pick me up a quart on the way over, you know? And I can't do that now. See, me and God had parted ways many. I grew up in Northern Ireland at the height of the Troubles, where people shot each other outside the front door over religion, over who had the biggest God. I remember as a young kid hearing a rat-tat-tat, open the door, there's two guys laying front on the steps front, dead. We got burnt out of our house in the middle of the night by the opposing paramilitaries. A guy went to school and died in hunger strike in the maze. I said, God, this is when I was drinking. God? You can talk about him. He never came down our street very often. I thought that was very slick and bohemian. But you know what? Desperate times call for desperate measures. And when you're out of options, you're out of options. And I was 30 years of age, sitting, and I've been running my life for a long time. And believe me, there wasn't a day went by I didn't think about walking into the Atlantic Ocean and getting it all over with. That's what me driving the bus brought me to. And this guy says, Paul, get down on your knees and say a prayer. I'm coming over to your house to help you. And for the first time in maybe 15 years, and it was a hot August morning, it was our cry in the dark, I got down on my knees and I cried out to a God that I wasn't even sure was there. I just said, if there's anything out there, please help me. And I felt like someone walked up behind me and took a great weight off my shoulders. And a sense of peace came over me that I've never experienced before since. And I started to worry and fret. And this feeling just, and this thought came into my head, you don't have to drink again if you don't want to. And the guys came to the door and I told them what I just told you. They said, Paul, you had a spiritual experience. It'll get you sober, but it won't keep you sober. We've got to get you to AA. And 4 days later, I was strong enough to go to my first meeting. And I walked in here, and walking into Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest singular event in my life. I walked in here with the problem, and you guys had the solution. I'm so glad there wasn't a guy with a clipboard check the box for what you want. I had to check the box for not drinking. I would have been happy. Just get the you-know-what off my back. And I would have shortchanged myself once again, because alcohol is only mentioned in the first half of the first step. The other 11 and a half steps helped me do what I couldn't do, drunk or sober, and that's live out there in God's world under his conditions rather than my demands. And I got free, as I said. And I came in, and those guys brought me to my first meeting. I just will move through this quickly. I'd like to tell you I came into AA and grabbed the ball and scored a touchdown. Contemporary investigation, it says in our book, you're looking at it. I looked at these steps, and the steps seemed touchy and feely and warm and fuzzy, you know. And I figured I'll do these steps. The next thing, I'll have wind chimes hanging up around the house, you know. And I'll be wearing flip-flops even in the wintertime, you know. Joining Oprah's book club. Where does it all end, you know? I'm in that. I carry that thinking into AA. Irish, stoic, don't tell nobody nothing. Have another drink and you'll be all right. That was my code of conduct. I was sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, dying from the inside out of untreated alcoholism. I was sitting in here with barroom mentality. Barroom mentality works well in the bar, but it doesn't go very far in Alcoholics Anonymous. That dog eat dog, what's in it for me? I had to let go of all my old ideas. And that was one of them. And I bottomed out in AA, 2.5 years off drink. Different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. Because I wouldn't put those steps. I'm not saying the steps are the panacea for every problem in your life. But the steps brought me to a point in recovery where I could decide what was my work, what was God's work, and if I needed outside help. And let the doctors be the doctors, but first things first, I had to do this program. And I wouldn't do it. And I'm 2.5 years off drink. And a guy came up to me in a meeting in AA one night and he says, Paul, can I talk to you for a second? And I was doing two parts of the triangle. I was going to meetings, service. I said, I'm making more coffee than Juan Valdez. You kidding me, service? But I wouldn't do door number 3. contemporary investigation. I want you to do the steps and I'll feel better. It doesn't work that way. It's my miracle. I have to participate in it. You can bring a horse to water, you can make him thirsty, but sooner or later he's got to put his head down and take a drink. And that was me. And this guy came up to me in AA and he says, "Paul, can I talk to you for a second?" He says, "You're dying, and you're dying in AA. And the help is right on the wall. You're like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. Just like tonight, there was a load of food on offer, and I was sitting off in the corner eating bread and water, and atrophying from the inside out of untreated alcoholism. And coming out with these sound bites and smiling from the teeth out and going home to another sleepless night. And these resentments, they were eating me alive. And I think with these resentments, those guys that burnt us out of our house that night, I was only a 7 or 8 year old kid and they put a gun to my father's head. I thought they were going to kill him and we got burnt out of our house in 1973 during the Troubles. And I'm sitting, and the thing about these resentments, the thing about these emotions, they've no IQ. They don't realize this stuff happened 25 years ago, 3,000 miles away. I'm experiencing them like they're happening right now. And all the spiritual toxicity that's released into your body when you're living your life on those parameters. Emmett Fox says it takes two to make a prison, the jailer and the prisoners. And I had all these people up here in this mental prison. And just like a regular prison, every morning I had to do a roll call of why they were there. I was building these walls in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was only when I opened the prison and let them go free that I got to go free too. Robert Frost says a wall's a good thing. Maybe if you're a New England farmer, but not if you're an alcoholic. I was building these walls and I built them high and I built them deep. Nobody's getting in, but I ain't getting out. There's a friend of mine says, "Paul, when you were sitting in AA like that, you're your own ecosystem. Nothing's getting in, nothing's getting out." I had to let somebody in. I had to let one man know where all the marbles were. I had to be spiritually accountable to one other person. I was telling a little bit to the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker. Nobody knew who I was, including myself. I took that man's advice. And I went and started to work through this program and put this stuff down on paper and get rid of these resentments and to get free. I was 2.5 years off drink. I came into AA. I didn't owe very much money. 2.5 years off drink. I was thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt. And I know why today. I was still trying to fill the hole in my soul. There's not enough stuff out there to fill that hole. I'd take a trip to the Caribbean. I'd feel good for a couple of days. But always end up back at the same equation. Me on me. And I can't get me off of me. The only thing that got me free from me was putting those steps into my life. And that wasn't it. That was only part of it. When my life took on new meaning, and we heard it today in the workshops, when my life took on new meaning, when great events came to pass in my life is when I turned around and took another man through the steps. That's when my life caught on fire. That's when great events came to pass in my life. I mean, is it good to work on me and work on me? I believe this, and this is not AA. I believe one day I'm going to be asked one question. What did you do with the gift that was given to you? And shame on me. There's a story, a spiritual story goes about a guy gives some people a treasure. And he went away for 20 years and he came back. And he said to each one of them, "What did you do with that treasure?" And the one guy says, "Well, I took the treasure, I invested it, and it came back 20-fold. He says, "Congratulations, well done. What did you do with the treasure I gave to you?" "I invested it, it came back 10-fold. "What did you do with the treasure that was given to you?" "Oh, I buried it in the ground for safekeeping." Shame on you. And that would be me. Shame on me if I put this in my back pocket for safekeeping. Because I need you and you need me. And without you, there's no me. I can't do this alone. We're in this lifeboat together. It's none of my business who's sitting next to me. Color, creed, religion, gender, none of my business who's sitting next to me in the lifeboat. What is my business? Am I willing to put my hand out and help that person the way that I was helped? Bill went looking for Bob. They went looking for Bill D. Bill Wilson lay, and I've stood outside that place, Towns Hospital, where he got sober. On the night that he got sober, on December 11th, I've stood there. And he had a vision of a chain of drunks, not just around the Northeast, around the world. One drunk helping another. And that's what I asked myself in my 10th step. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people going ahead of me? And is it more importantly strong to the people coming behind me? If someone comes to me and says, "Paul, can you take me to that place? Can I experience peace and happiness? Can I comprehend the word serenity and know peace? Can I know that? Absolutely. Walk this journey with us. We walk this together. We trudge this road together. And we trudge. And there's a rhythm to our lives. There's a purpose to our lives. There's a meaning. And that's sitting in some bar drunk tonight wondering what it's all about. I know what it's about tonight. And we keep that door open because I have never, well, I have been this story before, but I guarantee you, if I go to Brownwood, I wouldn't have to knock on too many doors, and I'll find somebody drinking themselves to death right now, oblivious to what's going on in here. And it's our job to keep that door open for the still sick and suffering alcoholic, whether it be inside or outside this room. I don't want to be here like that iconic Don McLean song. I don't want to be here the day the music died. There's a friend of ours that Roy talks about, Tom I, and he says, I hope he doesn't mind me using these words tonight. He says, AA is on our watch right now. This is on our watch. And if this goes down, shame on me. These guys have told me, if you can't leave Alcoholics Anonymous a better place than the way you found it, at least leave it the same so the next guy or gal can get sober. And we all need it here. We need the newcomers. We need the old timers. I'm the guys you got to watch for middle management. You know what I'm saying? Like that. We know just enough to destroy this thing, you know. Let me see what happens if I turn this knob here, you know. But keep this thing so we can trace this moment. Because right now there's somebody sitting drinking themselves to death. And we got to keep that door open. As I said, I walked in here in the worst night of my life and given the grace to drink. I'd like to end on a story about how AA works one alcoholic. That's what's really hit me this weekend, is the closeness and the working with one alcoholic and another here. And men sitting together, breaking bread together. It's so, so beautiful. And sitting with men I've never met before and feeling that closeness. The first country that AA went to was Ireland in 1946 in Europe. First European country. If there was ever a country that needed AA, it was Ireland. You know what I'm saying? And there was a guy, his name was Conor Flynn. He got sober in Philadelphia. He was from Ireland. He got sober in Philadelphia, and he goes home to Ireland on a retirement vacation. He only had 2 years in the program, and he realized there was no way in Ireland. He wrote a letter to General Service, and they said, well, why don't you start a meeting? And they sent him that a standard, like a startup kit, and they sent it to him. He went round, not unlike Bill Wilson 10 or 11 years earlier, knocked on a lot of doors, put an ad in the newspaper, getting nowhere. He was ready to pack it in, just like Bill Wilson, or feeling like nothing was working when he spoke to his wife. And he was sitting in a hotel one day, and there's a woman sitting at the next table, a non-alcoholic. We can never discount the impact that non-alcoholics have had on AA. Eva Jennings, and she got talking to him. She says, I know a doctor who works with alcoholics. Why don't you go and speak to him? So the guy went and spoke to this doctor. And the doctor says, I run a detox. I detox guys. I've never even heard of AA. This is 1946. He said, but I'll tell you what. We got a guy down in one of the rooms here. This guy's been detoxed 35 or 40 times. There's times he's drunk on the way home from the hospital. You make any impact on him and I'll give you the full support of this hospital. The guy went down and did what I tried to do tonight here. Shared experience, strength, and hope. Harry drank, Harry got sober, and Harry the man in the bed might get sober. The guy in the bed was a guy called Richard Percival from Dungannon in Northern Ireland. Richard Percival had been talked to, talked at, preached at, preached over, as we have been. But he realized this was something different. Just like Bill and Bob. This guy was talking his language. This guy understood him. And Richard Percival got out of his bed and never took another drink to the day he died in 1971. And those two men started AA in Ireland. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we have on offer here today. And we're able to do this in the start of meetings. And now I go home there. My brother's sober in Northern Ireland. I go home to meetings. And I love going to meetings in Northern Ireland. And I'll end in this story because it really typifies what's on offer here. I've been to meetings in Northern Ireland on some of the darkest days of the Troubles. And you talk about a place where people normally don't mix. How about never mix? But there's one place they mix in Northern Ireland. And it's in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I was home there one time and things were bad. One of the paramilitary leaders got killed in prison and the country just blew up. And I was asked to speak at a meeting. And I said to my brother, he says, Paul, we can't go down into Belfast tonight. He says, you've been living in the States too long. They're burning buses, there's barricades. It'll be crazy to go down. I said, let's go anyway. So we go down into Belfast. And we go through the peace line from West Belfast and East Belfast. Four Catholics in the car driving into a Protestant neighbourhood. And I love AA humor. One of the guys in the car says, just think about it. The last time a Catholic was in this part of Belfast after dark, he was in the trunk of the car, you know, and so we got to the meeting, and these guys realized the effort we had made. Now, they do a thing over there called joyride, where the kids steal cars, drive them around and burn them. And we pulled up, and all these young kids were standing around, and this guy came out of the meeting, he says to the kids, hey, kids, see that car there? Don't touch that car. These guys are friends of ours. And we walked into the meeting, and we talked about our sameness. We talked about what connects us. We talked about our experience, strength, and hope. And we left everything at the door where it should be. And we talked about our experience, strength, and hope as fellow members in this wonderful fellowship, this magnificent reality called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that same, we left the meeting, I went skipping down the street singing Kumbaya, you know, that didn't happen. But I felt good knowing that those guys are sober in the world, and I think they felt good at knowing that we were sober in the world. And that's the great thing we have here on offer, that I can come get on a plane and fly 1,500 miles and sit in a room full of people and feel like I never missed a beat and feel that closeness. And life goes on. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 30 years of age. I didn't have a high school diploma. I went to school in AA, bartended my way through college. I became a teacher in AA. I work in special education today. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going through a divorce right now. It's very difficult. I got a 9-year-old daughter. I thought to myself, 20 years sober, my life was falling apart. I'm not a good AA-er. What happened? I dropped the ball. And used men and women saved me. 20 years sober, my life blew up in my face. And things were going on, and I had to pray for people I didn't want to pray for and do things I didn't want to do. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and then sponsorship at the workshop, and a guy called me and he says, Paul, maybe we shouldn't call you as much. You're going through. I said, please, please don't stop calling me. I need you more than I ever needed you. And the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he'll pick up the phone and talk to men morning, noon, or night, and they'll pick up the phone and talk to me at 20 years sober with my life falling apart. You know, and that's what I need. I need that today, you know. And another thing I was going to do, including this convention here, I'll just tell Tom right now. When my life blew up, I thought to myself, I can't go out speaking. I'm ready to pick up the phone and cancel. My sponsor says, what are you going to do? I says, what have I got to offer? My life's upside down right now. I'm going through a divorce. Who wants to hear that? He says, you go and you speak. You go and tell those people that your life's not going well, but you're not drinking. And you're trying to practice these principles and all your affairs under difficult conditions. Go and tell them that. Yes, go and tell them that, you know. And how an Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't drink no matter what. I was an alcoholic who used to drink no matter what. Today I'm an alcoholic who doesn't drink no matter what. And if I think, and the one good thing I realized very early on when I was going through that difficult time, I'm still going through it, I realized because of used men, if I try to navigate this labyrinth alone, I'm a beaten docket. If I try to find my way out of this cave alone, I'm a beaten docket. And I reached out. I put my pride and ego on the back burner. And I talked about, because Alcoholics Anonymous is a reality check on how my life is going today. Not how I think it should be going or I want it to go. How it's going today. This is where the rubber meets the road. And if I can't get honest in here, I can't get honest anywhere. And my good friend Willard said to me, Paul, if you can't be sick in a meeting of AA, you can't be sick anywhere. And I came here and I put my hand up and I shared this stuff and used people helped me. And I seem to be coming out the other side of it now and the divorce is almost finalized and my daughter praying, she's got her higher power too and I have her a lot 4 or 5 nights a week and it's wonderful and things are okay. I didn't expect that to happen at 20 years sober. We don't know what's ahead of us. But what I do know ahead of me is if I keep this program up front, if I keep unity and service and recovery in my life, that this program works under all conditions. And it's not cash and prizes. It's the ability to put your head in the pillow tonight and know you put another sober day in the bank. And maybe think everything didn't go the way you thought it would go, but you did your best. And there's always tomorrow. If I'm drinking, you don't even get in the ball game. I might get up in sobriety and swing and strike and strike out and strike out and strike out, but I'm still in the game because I haven't taken a drink. And there's nothing left in a drink for me. This is where I belong. I ran around half the world looking for what I found in AA. I found you people. And when I found you, I found me. And we're in this together. And I want to thank you. And I just want to end on a few words from a place of my birth, and it just sums up everything that's true about Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe you heard this is an Irish blessing, and I want to partake it to my good friends here tonight. My life, my friends that I've met now, will be friends forever now in sobriety. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you. Good night and God bless.